Thank you very much for the chance to come and talk about irrigation as part of the Hort Innovation Lab funded project, also partly funded by the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation at Michigan State, also a USAID program. And I'm going to talk about farmer-led innovation in irrigation for smallholder farmers in Uganda. And I'm going to get on it. Okay, outline. So what I'm going to talk about is give a brief overview of small-scale irrigation for horticulture, then give a brief overview of our particular project, but then I want to drill into some different kinds of things than just the technology. So this is going to be light on technology and more on about process. And so partnerships, managing different goals for the common good, and going beyond capacity building. Local students as these amazing contributors and designers and entrepreneurs in projects like this. And then lessons learned. And those are some wonderful vegetables. I'm a vegetarian, so I am an expert on horticulture in Uganda. I've eaten everything. So vegetables, obviously, are a good thing. I'm speaking to the converted. They increase food security in the broadest sense, like John talked about it, and nutrition, which is increasingly recognized as important. Starting to hear more and more farmers talk about the nutritive value, and greens even substituting for meat in sauces. They're a good source of income. There's still a lot of local markets that aren't saturated for vegetables. And I think someone else mentioned you can harvest them multiple times over the season, so that's often very interesting to women who want to get small pieces of income over a longer period of time. And the opportunity, there's huge opportunity for irrigation. We had a project on leafy greens in central Uganda, finding that you can get paid 3 to 4 times higher for your vegetables in the dry season than in the rainy season. Then we also have this lovely opportunity of climate change creating unpredictable rainfall that increases the failure of all kinds of crops, vegetables included. So actually, irrigation might become just part of a climate smart strategy and not just be year-round, not just be used for dry season, which is how people often think about it. Less than 4% of the acreage of Ugandan crops are irrigated. Very little of that is on smallholder farms. And national attention, there's President Museveni, who is setting up an irrigation system, the president of Uganda, in his garden, the little plastic drip system. So there's just recently, it's like catching on fire, I would say, in Uganda, and I bet this is in other places as well. But there's really not a lot of capacity in the country to support this growing interest. Farmers are really interested, but as I said, the technical support is limited. In the past, irrigation has been focused on big, large-scale schemes that, you know, are big reservoirs or big channels and things, and really not paying attention to smallholder needs. Solutions are very site-specific, so farmers need to design what they need. Farmers really need to be engaged from the start. Now, we could say this about all development projects. I think we should say it about all of them, but with irrigation, you really have to be engaged from the start with the so-called beneficiaries, which I prefer to call partners. And needs and opportunities for women are often overlooked in any sort of new technologies and in irrigation. And I wanted to say that irrigation is not just about technology, but it's a lot about social factors. Governance. Irrigation is a shared resource, and so you have got to be ready to deal with the fact that you're going to have to figure out who gets how much water when. It isn't going to just happen effortlessly. Access to land, to good land, land that's irrigated, land rights are big issues, and particularly for women. And finance and investment irrigation often has a big upfront cost required to get going. So the goals of our project that's funded by Hort Innovation Lab is to develop innovations in small-scale irrigation for horticulture using participatory, I'm going to emphasize this word a lot, multi-stakeholder research platform to evaluate these different things. Then to identify constraints and solutions for engagement of women. And finally, to strengthen irrigation extension capacity among support organizations throughout, and all different kinds. We're engaging with all different kinds of people who can play this role. Participatory. So participatory means less of this. People in the classroom, somebody blabbing at them at the front of the room, some expert, in this case two experts. Less of this. Here the farmers are out in the field, right in their own fields, and somebody has come to lecture them on proper tomato cultivation from one of the local governmental extension offices. And just look at their faces. I mean, it's, yeah. More of this. So more hands-on in the field, getting muddy, trying stuff out, making sure everybody gets to be involved in the process. So I'm going to give you an overview of the project first. So we work in eastern Uganda, and the dotted line on the left map shows you this general region that we are in, which encompasses a lot of different hydrogeologic, soil, and climatic subregions, from Mount Elgon over to the east, to some fairly arid regions as you go north of that, to some areas that are actually somewhat wet, where drainage is an issue as well. Irrigation isn't only about drought, it's also about drainage, right? It's about water management in general. And so we recruited farmer groups. So we've got six sites, innovation sites that we work at, that where there's farmer groups that already, there was some semblance of a farmer group. They already had to be irrigation curious. And they all also had to have some kind of connection to market. We didn't want to start with people who were not doing anything at all for this particular project. Oops. This just gives you an example of some of the variety of landscapes, and hydrogeologic conditions from, you know, the area in Mount Elgon over to the east to some fairly arid areas, just giving you a sense of these different landscapes that we're working in. Each farmer group elected a committee that was 50-50 male-female to interface between the farmer group, the larger farmer group, which could be anywhere from around 80 to 200 farmers. And then there was also a water use organization started with a constitution and guidelines in preparation. And it had to be amended and be iterative, but to get ready for the fact that there was going to be water that was going to be shared, and there needed to be some sense of how to make that happen. Participatory design sessions were used with farmers and technical staff, which ended up characterizing the particular site overall, identifying different problems and potential solutions for them, and then figuring out what particular innovation the farmers wanted to bring on. So we have, it's not a big funded project, but it's enough funding to be able to seed the development of whatever kind of irrigation strategy the farmers wanted to work on. So we're not imposing the same thing across all the fields, right? It's what people wanted to do, what made sense for them in their own setting, but with lots of input from technical staff in terms of irrigation and also socially. Continual check-ins occurred we're still in the project, so I don't mean to talk in the past tense, but a very important part of our project is working with social workers. I'm going to talk about them more, but this is like a real revelation for us, I think, as the value and bringing in people who usually are not part of such projects. But the continual check-ins with farmer focus groups, just to sort of take the temperature or the pulse of what's going on along the along the time of the project, both with mixed gender groups, but also with women-only groups, to be able to hear, are there any particular issues that are going on that need to be aired? Is there something we can do to go about addressing that? And this is just an example of an outcome of a meeting. This is actually pulling together different kinds of what came out of different meetings. But you can see there's problems. Well, the problem is the labor requirement is high, and it's difficult to do irrigation. And then there's a number of causes for that particular problem that have to deal with landscape preparation. How do you move the water? What's the distance from the water source? Soil fertility, governance issues, drainage issues, and then those are the causes of this problem. And then above it are the potential solutions that the farmers came up with to deal with them. So that's where the ideas started to spin, you know, about how to address these different kinds of challenges that they themselves identified as problems. So problem and solution tree exercise there. And then here's just an example of one of the designs of an irrigation scheme that was done, again, the farmers with the engineers and the research staff. In this case, you can see that there's a stream that's a water source, and there's a distribution pipe that's moving the water over to a site where it can be split, then to be able to irrigate the farmers' fields, which are those funnily, differently shaped little patches of fields. And there the farmers decided that they wanted to, so there's two things involved with irrigation, right? It's getting the water to where you need it, and then it's distributing the water on the plots, right? It's two steps. So once they got the water over to where they're going to be farming, then they were interested in drip irrigation, and in sprinkler irrigation was what they decided. And there's just a picture of it implemented. It's how it looks in the flesh or in the soil in place. Okay, and then the other thing that we've done is at each of the sites, test plots have been identified where farmers conduct research in consort with the research staff as well, where they're comparing their previous irrigation approaches to this new improved irrigation practice that they wanted to use, so that they can be doing side-by-side comparisons. And we also brought local university students into this endeavor as well that I'll talk a little bit more about. So some of the irrigation innovations you can see are a variety of different things. The far right is oxen that have been repurposed to use to do tillage, but equipment was designed by university students to dig reservoirs to be able to hold water throughout the year. Then there's different ways of distributing water, sprinkler system, furrows, pipes. You've just seen different things. As I said, I'm not going into the detail of all these, showing another furrow system, a little distribution center there to move the water, women with hoses, and then there's some kids, because kids are, like John was talking about, are in this all the time, and the youth and the possibility of maybe having farming look a little bit more hopeful or exciting is an interesting aspect of this project, which I'll talk a little bit about. So partnerships. I want to talk a little bit about partnerships, which is managing different goals of different people for, you know, what should be a common good, because why are all the partners there? They're trying to do something that's going to, in some way, be beneficial to farmers. And that's a great quote from Jung. Give us all inspiration. The greater the contrast, the greater the potential. Great energy only comes from a correspondingly great tension of opposites. So out of these tensions, which occur, those of you who've worked in projects like this with big teams, they come all the time. Big tensions, big conflicts. And so we've decided to look at them all as wonderful opportunities to be able to learn more and be creative as a result of that. And so we've got tensions which are between technical issues and versus the social drivers. So technical versus the social is always there. Development versus research goals. We're a research project, even though we're researching a development context. But there's a lot of tension between those two. Traditional versus new practices, and agricultural productivity versus environmental impacts. And there's a bunch of others as well, but I'm focusing most on the first two of these. And so the farmers. So I want to just go through each of the major players in our project and then talk about an actual situation, kind of a challenge that occurred that sort of illustrates the roles of these different people and the compromises that people had to make in solving this challenge. So here are the farmers, and what do farmers want? Farmers want, you know, food. They want food security for their families. They want income opportunities, definitely very interested in that. They also want flexibility. They want to be nimble. They want to be able to change something, which sometimes drives researchers crazy, right? Because we need to collect enough data. It needs to stay the same. But they don't want to, you know, they want to be able to like, oop, no, I'm going to go do this instead, right? The nimbleness. So they are, and obviously they are the object of attention, object of affection, you know, in these projects. It's about farmers. It's supposed to be about them. But it's also, I think, really important to remember that we are all in a partnership together. We are all partners rather than this kind of attention on here's a beneficiary and I'm going to do all this stuff for this beneficiary. So think in terms more of a partnership among different players. Then we have the social workers. So we work with TUDI Uganda, which is an advocacy group for rural women in the Teso region of Uganda. And they didn't really do these kind of agricultural projects before, but they've been absolutely essential. You can see there's Helen sitting with farmers talking about, you know, what issues they have as well. And there she is with women. Boy, and this is a story in itself. This gentleman's back to us and these women. There's so many stories to tell in this project, which I don't have time for. But he started a women's group. He started his own women's group, which was quite an interesting story because it didn't, yeah, that isn't quite how it works. But social workers have been absolutely essential in being able to negotiate sometimes these incredible challenges that, like, you don't know why people aren't participating or why is somebody mad. And they can go and figure it out and bring it back as members of the team. And we have the engineers. Oh, my God, the engineers. So I hope there aren't any in the room. No, it's okay. But they're the guardians of the technology, right? And they know how to do it. They know how to do it well, efficiently, and they're very proud of their technologies, and they don't actually like to deviate that much, right? Because this is how it is, learned it this way, this is how you do it well. But they're obviously essential partners, right? No question about it. You don't do irrigation without irrigation people. I would say they're probably the least flexible people. And then we've got the researchers. So what we're trying to do is measure everything and study it and understand why did something work, why didn't something work, hopefully to communicate to other people that might be able to make use of this information. And also we're the guardian of the project. We have to make sure that USAID doesn't kill us because fire us or whatever. Beth, you know, that we have to make sure the project works out, right? So you're kind of guardian of the project. And then we also, I didn't want to not include these people, the ag research and extension specialists, so the agronomists, they're also a key part of it. But this is interesting. They are not working with irrigation specialists, and irrigation people are not really working with them. There's a big, big, big disconnect. It's been very hard for us to get them engaged in the project, which is maybe it would take a project itself to figure out why that is. But big disconnect when it's really all about growing crops. why we're irrigating for the most part. So definitely something interesting to think about and work on, and we keep trying to figure out ways to lure them into our project. Okay, so here's a case study. At a site in Jinja, we went through this whole process, participatory process, and this design was made, which was just perfect. It was cost-effective and technologically feasible, which was taking water from a spring and then down gradient from the spring was a big... Is that 25 minutes? Oh, okay. I have myself timed here, so that's why. So a big spring where so there's a big area of land owned by a landlord that leased land out to people. And so they could, we could get the water there really easily running down the pipes, and pretty much the infrastructure was set up and it was ready to farm. This is what the community agreed on, but nobody showed up. Nobody came. And it was really awkward. We didn't know what was wrong. Had everyone lost interest in the project? What was the deal? And with our social workers, they went and started talking to people. And it was particularly the women that were affected by it. They didn't trust this landlord, and they were particularly concerned that the landlord would up the price of the lease of the land now that it was improved with the irrigation system. They didn't feel that they would have access to the land in the future. So they weren't interested in it. So we had to go back to the drawing board, redesign the whole system from being centralized to decentralized with five spots, each with a cluster of plots around it being irrigated. But again, had to completely throw out the whole thing. Engineers were very upset. And I mean, I was upset too. It was scary, right, to have something like that change so much. But absolutely important for this. Okay, students. So the students are from Busitima University Irrigation Engineering. They're a local group, very vibrant group that are out in the field all the time with the farmers, like figuring things out side by side, looking at technologies, helping put in, sometimes making the engineers mad because they're doing the work that the engineers would like to get, you know, 100,000 shillings for, you know, for the resources. They don't see why the students are giving that information, but it's part of this participatory project, and it's not just about what exactly is right. You know, it's about the process of figuring things out. And we use a design approach where the students go out in the field, they look at what's there, and they look up a way to improve on it, and then come back and pitch it to the group, and then take it back out to the field with comments, do an economic analysis, and see what new innovations can be built, essentially riffing off of what's there and taking it to a higher level. And there's a water wheel that one of them designed to, because fuel costs are so limiting, to be able to get water. And the students are in the farms learning from the farmers. And what's really interesting is they are taking that knowledge home to their own family farms, because most of them are from farming backgrounds, as well as learning techniques and how to be an entrepreneur. They're the future farmers of Uganda, the FFU. Okay, so there's just all these things. These women in Luaso have noted that time savings from irrigation opens up new opportunities for them. And so this Ida in the middle is like pushing that women need a second career. They need a second enterprise now, a second business, like making chapatis or raising poultry in this time that's left up to them because they're now irrigating so efficiently. They're watering their plants so efficiently, so they have more time. Okay, so learned a lot. Am I finished or over? I am. Okay. Well, we learned a lot of lessons, you can see interdisciplinary, ultimate. It's not only about technology, it's a lot about de-risking discovery. De-risking discovery is this great term. Design process, social workers are important, and thank you very much. It's all about relationships.